Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, we spend so much time in the office, late nights, and even weekends. There's never enough time at home with family and friends, right? Well, there is a way to strike a balance. Get your work done and spend more time at home with GoToMyPC. With just a click, you can instantly access your office computer from any internet connection. GoToMyPC, brought to you by Citrix, is the easiest remote access service available. Improve your work life and really create some balance with GoToMyPC. And in fact, you can try it free for 30 days. For this special offer, you have to visit www.gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast for a free trial.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a stock slide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes at Bloomberg and CNBC. I'm now a poor boy. I need advisory, 'cause it's easy come, easy go. Bubble high, crash low. Never sell my broker tote. Doesn't really matter to him, to her. Told me not to sell.
Well, hello, it's Andrew Horowitz, and welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. That song was put together for us for episode number 100. It's kind of a direct hit to the brokers and to the media, and kind of tells the sentiment of a gentleman who had been listening to all the ideas of buy and hold. I won't give it all away, but it's an interesting tune that we will debut on the Disciplined Investor Podcast on episode 100 next week. So stick around for that. But again, it kind of displays our disgust and our concern for all the things that were told to us, that were taught to us, that were fought into the system or brought into the system. And we weren't allowed to do anything, it seemed. And we were helpless because our brokers told us, don't sell. And anyway, we put that together and kind of targeting some of those brokers and some of those people who are just all about buy and hold forever. And some of the things that have happened, and a little bit of a parody there that I think you'll enjoy. But I thought today what we'd do is spend a little time on a couple of topics. You know, it looks to me that I mentioned last week that there's indications that there is a bit of a capitulation happening here, that there's a disgust in the markets that is widespread. And it seems to me that we are on the precipice potentially of what was called a dead cat bounce. We outlined this actually in the book, The Disciplined Investor. Hint, hint, if you haven't gotten your copy yet, go over to Amazon, $13. What the worst can happen is you'll use it for some of the chapters on technical analysis and maybe on something else if you really hate it. You got to learn a little bit, right? Anyway, I thought I'd give you a quick plug on that because it's time for us to really, really dig in right now. Right now, more than ever, because it seems that if you look at some of the charts we put up on the Disciplined Investor site, which just go over there to disciplinedinvestor.com. There is some very significant indicators that look so severely oversold that only a few times in history you've seen this, and it could be the opportunity to dip your toes in. And I say this seriously. When I say dip, I don't mean, you know, dive in. I mean, you know, maybe wait in a little bit, put a little bit of money to work. If you're in cash, if you're short, I would consider, we've kind of taken our portfolios back from a total short position or a short hedge position, I should say, that we had at the beginning of February. We've been kind of moving over into a few positions on the long side. Nothing of significance, though, but enough so that we can, you know, get some opportunity to move into the markets if we do see this rally that will happen, because it's inevitable. It will happen sooner or later. Now, for those of you who have known me for a long time and have probably never heard me talking like this in the last year and a half or so, you know, we're going to be careful here. We're not going to do something stupid, right? We're not going to do anything. We're going to be disciplined. We're going to use our strategies to make sure that we, you know, monitor what we're doing. But I'll tell you, if you look at this chart that's on the site, and I encourage you right now, if you're listening and hopefully not in your car, but anywhere else, put this on pause. Go take a look at the various charts and tables that we put up, the things that we're looking at on the site, and follow along. Because what we're looking at right here is an oversold indication on the bullish sentiment for the New York Stock Exchange. And when you see that, actually, the S&P 500 and the S&P, but it's all the same. I mean, the bullish sentiment's the bullish sentiment. And when we look at these and we look at things like the stochastics and the stochastics relative strength index and the ultimate oscillators and all these different things, I mean, it is clear that we are hitting a low point here. Now, here's the one caveat. It's a gigantic caveat. You have to realize that these can go on for an elongated period of time. Because right now we are in this negative loop of information where, you know, we have information, media, and fear that's feeding on itself. And as we see the information come out on the economy that's negative and the earnings that are negative and the various indications that are negative, on top of that, we hear all the market pundits that are negative. But, you know, when I see that Doug Kass, one of the most famous and the most well-respected short sellers, Seabreeze Partners, is taking his foot off the pedal on the shorts and going a little bit long. When I see Bill Fleckenstein closing down his fund on the short-only side because he wants to be more flexible to both sides, you know, it makes me, for a moment, stand up and just listen to what's going on. So right now, I think there's an interesting opportunity. In addition to that, the other thing that caught my eye was the relatively declining volume on the selling on the New York Stock Exchange and on the NASDAQ. We saw a decrease in the volume. In other words, not as much of a commitment to the selling. The Friday pop. And finally, something I think is very interesting that we need to consider. We're in the latter part of, we're about to be in the middle part of March. At the end of the quarter, mutual funds and portfolio managers, institutional pension plans will actually rebalance their portfolios. They're going to go from, let's just say, a 50-50 stock and bond portfolio. They're down 25% on their stock positions right now. And what are they going to do? They're going to rotate from that. So now if they were 60-40 at this point or whatever the equation is right now, depending on how much they lost on their stock positions, they're going to rotate some of the money from cash or fixed income into the stock portfolios, just like they did at the end of the year. Maybe not that immense nature that we saw at the end of the year for that end of the year rally, but it will be significant. There will be some money moving into that area. The question is it enough to spark and be a catalyst for a rally and clearly a dead cat bounce here, a rally of in a bear market? Is it enough to really push it higher? Well, we're going to bring on a guest today, Charles Bitterman from Trim Tabs, to see what he has to say. I know in conversations I've had with him, he's pretty negative on the markets. He not only predicts the unemployment, and we have been passing that information on to you really ahead of the curve, and he brings to us some information that is really much different than you'll see from the government's information on unemployment. He looks at the payroll numbers and much more accurately seemingly predicts what's happening with employment. I've been speaking with him. He has a fund he runs. It's up, I think it's up 40% for the year or something like that, or for the recent period, because he's all short, it seems. And he's telling me that unemployment is pretty ugly right now, and there's a lot more to consider. But I'll bring that to you. I spoke to him offline before we set this up, and we'll call him in a minute and get that going. The other thing that I want to mention to you is that it is the 100th episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Some of you have sent in some information. I would ask you to this, please. Send me your success stories, how you've become a disciplined investor. We've been doing this for a long time now. You've read the book, hopefully heard the audiobook available at audible.com. You were able to hopefully soon get the Kindle version, which Amazon keeps telling me is going to be happening. I keep getting emails about that all the time, that they took it off for a few months because of some crazy administrative issue, and it's going back on very, very shortly. But I would like you to please send me your notes, and we'll actually sweeten the deal here. I'll send you a free book if you haven't gotten one yet, or a free audiobook. If you send me what it is that you've done to become a disciplined investor, keep it short, one paragraph or so, and we'll read it on the air. I like to get a lot of these because I like to hear these success stories. They're really fabulous and really make me just feel that we're doing something very special here. And I know that you do appreciate it, and I appreciate you. And hopefully we can get a lot of those in and spend some time just going over those next week. But we'll also bring that song, the Buy and Hold City, as we call it, which is kind of a Queen parody of of kind of the negative cycle that we've seen because of the media and the brokers and some of the toll it took on us. So hopefully we'll get a little bit of we're not ragging on ourselves. We're not kind of looking at anybody else. We're just kind of looking at the situation and saying, you know what, pretty negative out there. And maybe we can break that by a little bit of levity, because we got to break this negative feedback loop, because eventually we know markets are not going to zero, right? 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 Markets are not going to zero. So it's time that we consider what's on the other side of this great, great travesty that happened with the banking, with the real estate, and what's going on with our markets. Where are the winners? Where are the losers going to be? And how do we play them? It's all about making money. You know, it's all about making money and getting those opportunities, because the greatest fortunes have been made during the times of the greatest fear and the greatest anxiety in the real estate, stock market, and many, many other places. We're also going to start, somebody sent me an email that was, I thought, pretty interesting. We're going to bring you, they said, you know, Andrew, we're talking about a lot of different things lately, talking about the markets, talking about, you know, overview, but what happened to the stock tips? And I'll tell you something, what happened to them, there really were no stock tips. We talked about some of the short position that we like, but really, to be very honest with you, the long side has been non-existent for the most part. But you know what? I'm going to bring you next time on episode 100, and I'll bring you a good chunk of individual ideas, short and long, to hopefully make up for the time that we kind of took our foot off the pedal because of these markets were, well, outright devastating. And we'll bring you some other things, I think, that would be interesting. Send your ideas to me, of course, and your letters, your comments on how you become a disciplined investor, to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And when we get back, we'll be here with Charles Bitterman, Trim Tabs. He is pretty negative on the markets, I know that. He's got a good handle on the employment situation, and we'll hear all he has to say on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Looking for answers to today's complex financial markets? Then be sure to get your copy of The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, your all-in-one guide to investing.
All right, we're here with Charles Bitterman, who is the founder, I believe he's co-founder of, we'll find out in a moment, of Trim Tabs, and one of the gents who very accurately predicts the employment situation. Fortunately, we have someone like him and his firm to bring us what's really going on here, rather than the rhetoric we're hearing from BLS, et cetera. So thanks for joining us again, Mr. Bitterman.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
So, you know, you and I were talking offline a minute ago and discussing a lot of the different things that are going on, and the news is obviously very bad. You put out a recent release that I think saw on your the way that you study things, which is based on payroll numbers, that I think that the numbers were about 785, I think it was.
Yeah,
on your last number,
750, 800,000 job loss, maybe more a month.
And you know, the problem is that we've clearly been on a slope, not only downward, but directly downward, vertically, I guess is the best way to describe it, of late. And I guess one of the things that's just itching to be answered is there's going to be a time, there's going to be a point that things stop at the trajectory that they are. There's no question about that. Mathematically, it's impossible to continue the trajectory we're on right now. When do we know? When does it happen? What's going to be the catalyst? I mean, what's going to change what's going on? Because it's clearly not a speech by President Obama.
Right. Well, historically, whenever markets always bottom, when companies step up to the plate and start buying back shares hand over fist, and right now they ain't doing that. They're doing the opposite. I mean, there's been some PR announcements of insider buying, but if you look at, we track all insider buying that they report to the SEC, and insider buying is the lowest level in over a year currently. Stock buyback announcements have ceased. Pretty much, the number and dollar amount of stock buyback announcements are de minimis. That's one of my favorite phrases, meaning very little.
Yeah.
And while we can't track actual buybacks in real time, in London, the London Stock Exchange, companies are required to report buybacks in real time, and it's averaging $1 million a day. And a year ago, it was $135 million a day.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, people don't have the money. I mean, let's face it.
No, that says that companies don't want to buy back their shares, regardless of how far down things are.
Yeah.
Now, the other key point, before you interrupt, sorry, The other key point is incomes, as evidenced by withheld income and employment taxes that employers send into the Treasury every time they pay their help, is plunging like 4 or 5% year over year. And we ain't never seen anything like that in a nominal term. Now, maybe in the mid 73, 74, when the energy crisis first hit, given that inflation was so high, after inflation, wage gains might or wage losses might have been at 4 or 5% decline, but we've never seen nominal drop like we've seen in wages. Mm-hmm. So incomes are plunging. Companies are reluctant to buy back shares, and who cares what the president or anybody says? People are being forced to sell stock to pay bills. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that simple. Yeah. Supply and demand. There's too much supply of shares and no demand.
Yeah, no demand. And, you know, what's interesting, though, is I have found historically that it appears that right now there's an incredibly high level of negative sentiment. We have this feedback loop that everybody's been talking about, and we have, you know, and by the way, not that there's any mystery to the fact of why we have all this. I mean, people losing their jobs, losing their homes, lower income, unclear outlook. I mean, we can go on and on. Obviously, you know, is a not only a negative feedback loop, it's negative, period. So the question, though, is oftentimes I have found that when you get into this kind of, you know, hysteria on either the positive or the negative, it seems to be a time when we may see a break. But that being said, the question is there has to be a catalyst, right? There has to be something that changes the thinking. So whether it's going to be a stimulus package like we saw from, you know, or a fake stimulus package that we saw from China, or something, something we haven't even thought about. Is there something in the banking sector? Is there something that the government's going to do, whether it's going to be, you know, real or not? Is there something that you could see on the horizon that's going to, you know, at least nudge us in a different direction in the markets?
Well, markets trade their way to perdition in a bear market. So, yeah, there's always very sharp, very steep bear market rallies. I mean, yesterday near the close, I shorted some more stock. You know, there's always going to be rallies for some reason. I mean, you know, if mark-to-market accounting becomes suspended for a while, that could probably squeeze the shorts in the banks. But is that going to improve the situation? Heck no. The fundamentals are horrible.
Right. So if the mark-to-market accounting rules change, it appears to me that it would be just simply, you know, painting the pile of dog crap a different color.
Well, you know, here's the real problem, okay? Yes, the market's way down, and yes, those people who are trying to ride it out are losing a lot of money.
Yeah.
And those who listen to their brokers or listen to commentators and got back in January because prices are cheap and there's $10 trillion in cash in the system, I mean, whatever that means, those people are being buried here. But the real problem is incomes are collapsing. I mean, in the fourth quarter of last year, wages and salaries were down about 2% year over year, which is pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's down 4 to 5% in the first quarter of this year, a lot worse. So if wages and salaries are down 5%, other income, capital gains, interest income, partnership income, self-employed income, is down 12% year over year. Now, what I'm getting to is there's $24 trillion in loans outstanding to consumers and to companies.
Mm-hmm.
$24 trillion, and the banking system has like $1.5 trillion in capital if you, you know, don't, if you're generous, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
$1.5 trillion in capital in the banking system, $24 trillion in loans out there. Now, yeah, not all the banks don't have all the loans. Insurance companies, hedge funds, other people have lent that money out, so to speak. And we're not talking about government debt. But when incomes are down that much, that means that the ability to collect that debt is in significant question.
Right.
There's going to be a lot of bad loan surfacing over the rest of this year. So if there's a lot of bad loans going to be surfacing, what is equity really worth for a lot of these companies? There is no real equity.
Yeah, and how about that? I'm going to interrupt you again. I'm sorry. It's kind of my show, so I get to do that, I guess.
That's all right.
Thanks. So let me ask
I'll
you this.
I'll let you.
So, you know, one of the biggest collectors of monies for, well, it doesn't matter debt, but a collector is the government in the form of taxes, right? And they have unlimited power to grab that from you. But are we going to see the government having difficulty, collecting the money that they so desperately need to pay out to solve the problem? Do you think that's we're headed for something like that?
Well, fortunately, the United States is the only currency that the rest of the world is willing to accept right now. So The dollar is doing much better. The euro is imploding. Several of the euro countries are going to go bankrupt this year, my prediction. Spain, Ireland, some of the Eastern European ones are in horrible shape. And so the euro is probably going to go less than parity, less than dollar, less than 1-to-1 versus the dollar. The yen is a small currency. The Swiss franc is probably a good buy, but the Swiss franc is not very big in terms of dollar or in terms of how many what can be bought. So there is money that will be flowing into the U.S. dollar, which means the government will be able to sell debt, short-term debt, over the next year or two. After that, who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, there
might be. We might have, you know, I'm telling people, well, I mean, I think that the dollar is a good buy and that interest rates are going to stay low for the next couple of years. But unless something else happens, or I think we could see 10% plus interest rates again in a few years as printing.
As inflation comes back, because we spent so much, printed so much money.
Well, we're printing paper. Yep. We're selling. You know, we're just print to pay bills. And
so, what do you expect? What do you anticipate the unemployment rate? The there's two different unemployment rates, obviously, but the one that we're used to seeing at the 7% ish point right now, what do you expect that to actually go to by the end of this year?
Well, I think we're going to see another 5% adding on to unemployment over the next 12 months.
So we're talking about into the, give or take, the 12.5 range?
Yeah.
Okay.
Something like that.
And then there'll be pockets, of course, of places that will be much worse.
Yes.
Yeah, that's going to be.
Unfortunately, I wish, you know, there's only one solution that I see, and they're not going to do this. I mean, we're seeing class warfare starting in a bit. You know, the Obama administration is really saying that the rich people are bad and the poor have been taken advantage of or something like that. That seems to be where we're headed. The only solution is not raising taxes on the rich and giving make-work jobs or giving the states money so they can pay people to stay on payroll and not have to do very much.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon my political anarchistic rhetoric. I mean, just to paraphrase what I've written many times in the past, if you can't fire a government worker for not doing his job, do you have any right to expect them to do it?
Right. Consequences. No consequences.
Yeah, so, I mean, giving the states money so they can pay their bills, which is really giving state payroll, keeping the state payroll solvent, and so that they can pay their workers. I mean, is that stimulus? Not in my book.
No, but what is the right answer? What is the right answer that can actually do something, in your opinion? Because
well,
it seems that we've
exhausted... Well, if incomes are down 4%, there's one simple way the government can boost incomes, and that's cut withholding by 4%, or the equivalent of 4%, or 8%, or 9%, whatever it is, so that people take home more money than they're taking home now. Everybody, you know, you don't want to limit it to people making less than $300,000, fine. But if they don't cut withholding...
And that seems like an easy process, doesn't it?
It's very simple.
And why won't they do that?
Pardon me?
Why won't they do that?
Because it's class warfare. They don't want to, you know, it's like the worse things get, the more government workers are needed.
I tell you, it is so beyond my understanding why some of the simplest measures to kickstart this economy, or at least maybe not kickstart, to stabilize it or stop it from falling off a cliff, isn't being...
You know, I wrote the same thing back in October of last year. Here's some simple steps. Reduce withholding. Give people back more of... Let people keep more of their wages.
Mm-hmm.
Give employers tax incentives to hire. You can give them credits or you can give them holidays. If you hire someone, you don't have to pay their withholding for 6 months, so it's cheaper to hire people. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you could do to kickstart the economy, but make work jobs? Giving the states money so they can meet their payrolls? I mean, what does that do for anything?
Well, but I don't understand where they're even coming up. I mean, I actually thought originally there was some good ideas in the original concept. At least, I mean, some make work jobs. I mean, if people are unemployed, you got to do something about that. I mean, so you can't just cut their payroll because there's no payroll to cut. There's no payroll taxes to cut, I should say, if they're not working, you know? And obviously, giving them a tax credit doesn't do much to them either if they're not getting any income from
employment. Well, but it gives those people with jobs more income so that they can buy more and spend more, and they don't necessarily have to sell stock to pay their bills. The other thing is, you know, why doesn't the government just guarantee more new mortgages? Forget the people with the problems. Okay, yes, there are people with problems. But if mortgage rates were 3% or 4%, I mean, government bonds, you know, why can't they give mortgages to people who actually, you know, no more than 80% loan to value?
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a job. But if people could buy a house and know that their mortgage payment was 3%, in areas like California where there's huge amounts of sales of foreclosed homes, even when the mortgages are 6%, that would put a bottom under the housing market. And yeah, a lot of the big banks are insolvent, but thousands and thousands of local banks have money. They're just not lending because they're scared.
Yeah, but now the local banks are going to be charged additional monies for their part to pay for FDIC, which seems to be going insolvent in a quick stead. And
well,
now,
wait, one second. The FDIC has no money. I mean, this is Smith that there's a reserve out there. It's sort of like Social Security. I mean, the government collects the Social Security payments that people make, and they spend it, and then they give themselves a note.
Yeah.
You know, FDIC collects money.
IOU.
It gives it to the Treasury. The Treasury gives it to the government. The government spends it, and there's an IOU to the FDIC. So there is no money in the FDIC. There is no money in Social Security. It's all government notes.
I'm going to press you again because I'm hard to understand how the entire world is going to further collapse. By the way, I'm being the devil's advocate here. I'm trying to press you for this, and I'm not doing a silver lining question. I'm more morbidly curious. How bad does this possibly get? I mean, but let's admit that we're pretty bad shape already, right? How much worse does this all get? I mean,
there's another problem that as to why things are probably going to get worse before they get better, and that is that the data that the government collects is bad. You know, there's I can't really use this, but there was a phrase in the military, FUBAR, the first two.
Correct.
The first word,
yes.
I won't, but beyond all repair,
mm-hmm.
the last three. And government data is FUBAR, and they don't use real-time data. There's withholding income tax collection data available every day. The Bureau of Economic Analysis does not look at that when they report incomes. So they reported that there was a savings rate of 5%, people are saying, and the Obama administration saying, oh, there's a crisis in confidence. People have money, and they're putting it in the bank, and they're not spending it. The only problem with that is that based on how the government does their analysis of incomes, in January they say incomes were up 1% year over year. And income tax collections were down 5-6% year over year in January.
Right.
There's no way incomes were up. Mm. As a matter of fact, incomes were down. We had a negative savings rate in January, not a 5% savings rate. How does the government come up with that? Well, they take historic data from the states that's 7 months old. Every employer is required to report to their state how much they paid each employee for unemployment insurance purposes. And so the BEA gets that data 4, 5, 6 months after the fact, and then they adjust that data based upon estimates of unemployment by the BLS, and they're still in December and January, they're showing year-over-year gains in income, at the same time as income tax collections are plunging. So they're saying that there's a positive. There ain't no positive savings rate. So the government can't handle this because they don't have good data to handle it. You got to remember, in the 30s, one of the problems with the 30s, no one knew how many people were unemployed. Nobody knew what incomes were. There was no measures for it. Nobody counted it. That there was no data. So you imagine trying to solve a problem like the Great Depression without knowing what's going on.
Well, it's kind of like where we are right now. There's no difference, is what I see.
Yeah, well, now we have bad data, which is almost worse.
It's worse because here's what I see. The information that we use, unless you want to be super curmudgeonly skeptical, which, okay, we could do that. Let's be honest for a second. I understand you are, but let's be honest for a second. What's being force-fed to the average guy and girl out there is information that is less than accurate, it is less than timely, and it is unfortunate because there's two things that happen. Number one, it's clear they're trying to cover their tracks, make things look a lot better, because who in their right mind would use the current employment data and try to say that is anything close to reality or even something that they can hang their hat on? And why would a government who's all about transparency, by the way, here come the parentheses, they're going to do stress tests on the banks, and the same government that's all about transparency is not going to release that data to the public, end parentheses. Yeah,
and, well, you know, we've talked to, I've asked the Treasury, every time an employer files their taxes, if the employer said how many people worked there, and what was the gross wages paid, and what's the zip code that where the employer operates from, we would have real-time data on incomes, on jobs, and by region. And you know what the IRS said? Too much paperwork.
Yeah, no, too much.
I mean,
too much work.
Insane. Mm. I mean, they don't want to, you know, and you know what? Nobody else has asked them to do that.
Right.
Nobody else has asked, other than me, that the at least this is what the BEA, the Treasury, Bureau of Labor Statistics, have told me, that no one else has requested this. I don't know why the Obama administration or the Bush administration or any of these guys don't realize that this data is bad.
Mm.
And that's one of the real problems. Maybe your viewers should all say, hey, Biederman, listen to me.
Yeah, no, but I agree with you.
Real time data, that's what we need. This is a real time world.
Yeah, there's something.
Why are we using snail mail? You know, they mail out their survey, the BLS mails out surveys to employers, and then the employers mail it back. Is that the world we want to operate? Is that the world we're living in?
And there's no requirements for accuracy in this, obviously. Let me switch over to the discussion of, you mentioned something about the euro and the European zone. It seems to me that you have, first of all, we have the Titanic sinking in Europe, and there are boats out there. And the Western Europeans are in the boat, and they looked at the Eastern Europeans that are floating in the water and said, no, you cannot come in my boat.
Yeah.
Would that summarize it for you pretty well?
Yeah, and the Western Europeans are in bad shape themselves.
Right.
So, you know, the thing that really decimated the globe in the 30s was protectionism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, let's protect our friends and family and neighborhoods and countries, and screw the rest of the world. And we're heading in that direction, unfortunately. I hope we don't go there. I'm not looking for a global collapse. I don't want a one of the reasons I'm so incensed about this is that there's all this common sense stuff that they're not doing, and they're talking about, oh, yeah, the Bush administration, where they were bad, and that's the reason why things are so screwed up here. No, people made, you know, there was a global expansion based upon broadband, based upon global wealth creation, and things got to a point where you're not going to keep growing at 10% a year globally, and we were reached, and too much money went into real estate, too much money went into leveraged debt instruments. You had the gambling credit default swaps where AIG and others were willing to write that stuff, assuming nobody ever goes bankrupt. We'll just collect the premium and live happily ever after, except when things go bad and AIG is being forced to be taken over by the government. Bernanke said that, you know, he was incensed by this, that no one thought that credit default swaps could be the calamity they've been. I mean, so, yeah, there were some errors, but had nothing to do with an administration or anything, and
It's all about greed. It's all about greed. That's what it was, and we know the players very well, and they haven't taken the foot off the pedal.
In good times, people get greedy, and in bad times, people get scared, and that's always happened. That always will happen. We're not any worse now than we were in the past. It's just a global economy, and we just need some people who have accurate information to make some common sense decisions to remedy the situation. Unfortunately, I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Do you think that the stimulus plan, any part of it, will it may not be the last stimulus plan, clearly, but do you think that we'll actually see something in the form of, by the way, I think you're the perfect person to ask this. It's the same question about the same topic, I should say. The commentary on the stimulus plan is this: that it's going to, save or create, let's call it 4 million jobs, right? Now, I'm thinking that's a very cool language to be very slippery of. In other words, if they say they're going to save and maybe don't create, well, a lot more could have been lost if they didn't do it. And there's a lot of ways to kind of, you know, get out of that exactly to make sure that it looks like you did the right job there. But is it really going to create jobs in any significant form?
No. The only jobs it'll save are bureaucrats, or Democrats by definition. And so, yeah, it's save the Democrats. It will increase the security blanket, more unemployment, more this, more that for the marginal, who are also Democrats. So, yeah, it's basically save the Democrats and screw the world package. There's no stimulus here. It's counter-stimulus. It's taking good money and throwing it away, giving it to people who aren't going to do anything with it that's productive. So there's no stimulus.
There's no stimulus. Okay, so that said, we have problems with unemployment. We have problems with employment. We have problems with the stimulus. We have problems with the markets. Do you have a prediction on where the S&P 500 is in the next couple of months?
Well, I think probably the S&P 500 could go to around 500, something like that, another 30% down, something like that.
And is that do you consider that to be conservative, or you think that's kind of at the edge, or what are you thinking?
Well, if earnings are going to be at about $40, if you go top
and they're at about 60, they're close to 60 now, right? Isn't S&P 50-ish, high 50s they're estimating?
Yeah, so if things keep collapsing the way they are, if it goes to 40 and it's at 12 times earnings, that's 500.
That's nice. That's nice.
I mean, that's, you know...
You know what's nice about that? You know what's really disastrous about that? It's disastrous that I'm still talking to people who are staunch buy-in holders will not get out, and I just don't understand it. And by the way,
well, you know, my favorite story. I was when I was a kid, about 300 years ago. My favorite book about the market was Jesse Livermore's Diary of a Stock Market Operator. Jesse Livermore predicted the 29 crash, made a lot of money in 30 to 32, and then in 1940, he killed himself in the men's room at the Sherry Netherland Hotel in New York because he couldn't pay his hotel bill. Mm. And why? Why? Because he got back in too soon. Stocks were cheap. People who think stocks are cheap and get back in, they usually,
I mean,
but the phrase is catching a falling sword.
This happened to Warren Buffett in October. And, you know, there's also a difference, by the way, about getting in but also being able to get out. See, there's the problem. You can get in all you want. You can get in all you want, and you can trade, and you can get out, too. There's a problem, though. The problem is not the first point of getting in. The problem is getting out, and if you don't want to get out because you want to be, you know, absolutely 100% invested, or at least significantly invested, and with no exit strategy, there's the problem.
Yeah. So let me give you one last thing as for your readers or viewers or whoever.
They happen to be listeners, but that's okay.
Listeners. Is that... wait and see until companies start to buy back shares and you see lots of stock buyback announcements, companies buying other companies for cash. That's the bottom. Mm. Until that happens, stay away.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, thank you for joining me and enjoy your stuff. We do push the information you put out to our readers, actually, not only listeners, but our readers, and we do direct them to your site. It's trimdebs.com, and I'll put a link to Mr. Biederman's information, which I think is a valuable resource, and I encourage you to read it quite often, pearls of wisdom on a regular basis. Thank you so much for joining me on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Good to be with you.
All right, speak to you soon.
Have
bye-bye.
A good day.
Thanks. Well, why don't you say we keep it a little bit short on this episode so we can prepare for the next one. It's going to be a crazy week ahead, I can promise you that. We have limited economic data that's coming out. We have earnings season that's kind of contracting. In other words, we don't have as many reports coming out. And I think that's going to be, I don't want to get too bullish here by any means, which we're not. But I think that is a good level of excitement and opportunity to start a little bit of a bounce here. But again, I think that you need to watch the charts, watch the indicators. Pay close attention to the, I like the 2-minute stochastic if you want to do some technicals. And I think more importantly, we have to watch the sentiment and the overall volume increase a little bit on an uptrend. There's some interesting plays out there. One of the things that we like very much is to short. Listen now, this is very interesting. The short, the double shorts. We did this in the Strategy Lab and very well, and you saw that. We've done it before in our portfolios at the Discipline Investor Managed Growth Strategy. By the way, if you want to see what we're doing, you want to see what we're talking about for our clients, we have a special trial that is just a peek inside the blog that we have. We love total transparency. The clients love to communicate. We go back and forth. And we have great conversations and commenting, something that you don't see with other portfolio managers as far as we can see. And if you want to know what we're doing, you're thinking about maybe having us manage your money, go over to the Disciplined Investor and ask, send a note, put it in, again in a link in there, that you want to get a free trial, a 10-day free trial to the blog, and we'll set you up and you can see what's going on if you're considering coming on board. If you want to see that 14-minute video, it's also there so you can see how we manage money. But with that in mind, I go back to the point that if you look at the double inverse ETFs that are out there, one of the things that happens when they have to buy these swaps and the options inside the portfolios, I think that if we've noticed anything, when the markets are going with them, they do very well. But once they turn around, especially when they've been going in one direction for an elongated period of time, there's a great opportunity, a shorting opportunity of the double shorts. A lot of people looked at the returns on a normal circumstance. It says that the double shorts are always a loser because of the volatility and oscillation of the markets. That being the case, if it's always a loser, why not short it? It's a very dangerous play. You got to be very careful. Set up your stops carefully. Utilize something like we call the edge strategy to pick it up off the tops. But if it works out well, particularly like an SKF or an SDS or some of the other SRS for that matter on the real estate, but particularly the ones that are really at the top end of their spectrum. And if you look to short those and they do come down, what happens is internally the swaps and options deflate because the volatility will just evaporate. And more so than just deflating with the actual market, they'll do much worse. Take a look at them on a chart back in November and October through the end of the year, and you'll see what I'm talking about. There's the correlation goes haywire, the beta goes haywire, and I think that there's something to be said about this opportunity. But be careful with it, like I said, because it is a very dangerous move if it goes in the wrong direction. Make sure you have stops set and make sure that you know what your plan is before you invest. Be disciplined. And I'll mention one more time, askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com is the address for you to send your experience, how you've become a disciplined investor. Really, that would mean a lot to me if you could send them off to me at that address. And so we could read that on the next episode. I'll be happy to send you a free book or an audio book. It's a great opportunity for us to understand what's happening with you, to hear the success stories. There's so many of them out there. I know that. I've talked to so many of you, but this is a great opportunity for us to really get firsthand and to maybe share some of that with everybody else in the podcast. A little bit of a celebration for the 100th episode anniversary of The Disciplined Investor. So thanks for joining me today. We'll be here next week. We got some great guests lined up, just some awesome guests lined up. And really, thank you so much for listening. Any questions, you know where to find me. Until next week, be safe. It's going to be an interesting week ahead. This is Andrew Horowitz on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Bye-bye for now.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.